Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 298 of the podcast. It's the 3rd of December 2016 as I record this, and I'm a little croaky and coughing and sick because I did an art trail with my cousin last weekend. And after helping her out on the stall for several hours, she's a glass artist, and we did several hours with people coming through, you know, on the sort of Christmas shopping trips, and I must have inhaled, I don't know, this heady cocktail of winter bugs, including a ton of school kids. So I have a nice bug. So apologies for my voice. So today I have an interview with Mark McGuinness, and we're talking about productivity for authors and creatives. But actually, we go much more into managing time and the long-term mindset around asset creation, plus how Mark balances his love of writing poetry with being a businessman with a family and obviously needing to make a good living. So as ever, I love talking to Mark. He is a wise friend of mine and someone I go to when I need some stability and some advice. So I love bringing him onto the show. So that is coming up. And also in the show notes, I'll be linking to Mark's poetry prize, which is very exciting. And also a post he just wrote on asset creation, which is fantastic. So as always, check out the show notes. So in publishing news this week, a few interesting things. First of all, Amazon has added ebooks in 5 languages to the Indian Kindle store, including Hindi, Tamil, Marathi, and some other languages, which means it will step up its domination of the Indian ebook market. Because, of course, although English is the kind of national language of India, each state has their own language. And I think there are a ton of languages that people speak in India. It's amazing. But having these Kindle books in different languages will be really important in sort of dominating that market. It's also interesting because some languages haven't been available on the Kindle, presumably for some technical reason, certainly some of the Indian languages have very interesting alphabets. So it will be interesting as to whether this now means that any language can be used on the Kindle. Also on ebooks, the EU or European countries anyway, European sales tax or VAT will be changing. There's no specifics as to how much, and it really won't affect, well, it will affect you in that you'll get more money in your pocket if you are making sales to European countries. But because all the stores changed their pricing model so that you enter the price including VAT, you won't need to update your prices as we did back in 2015. You'll just get more money. So happy times. Although I did also see an article, I think it was about Iowa, who will be adding sales tax to ebooks, or at least thinking about it. So I think we just have to accept that sales tax is part of life and that we will have to deal with it. You just have to accept it, really. Also in publishing, yesterday was the Future Book Conference in London, which I consider more of a state of the publishing industry right now rather than the future, to see what they've caught up with, because the Future Book Conference I see is normally a couple of years behind what indies are doing. They had an audiobook revolution track, which was interesting, and I didn't attend the conference. I just looked through the Twitter stream, and that was quite interesting. But the audiobook revolution comments implied that more publishers will be doing audio, which is great, because at the moment the audio market is dominated by Audible, which of course is Amazon, and it would be great to get some more competitors to that. Also, competitors to ACX, and also more opportunities for authors outside of the US and UK. So yeah, that was interesting. And actually, talking of audiobooks, once my voice settles down, I will be back in the studio. I was meant to be going in on Monday, but I won't be. I will be going later next week once my voice is better. to record How to Make a Living with Your Writing and also Successful Author Mindset for Audible. And I did record them already. Many of you will own those, but I'm going to re-record them and so I can put them on ACX, but they will be non-exclusive on Audible. And I'll also sell those direct on my site. And if you've already bought the Author Mindset, for example, you will be able to get the new version for free. I'll just upload a new version. So I think that this non-exclusive approach to audio is probably a good idea for now, because I suspect there will be a lot more opportunities coming in 2017, 2018. Okay, also BookBub spoke at the Future Book Conference. So although many of us have already seen traditional publishers hoover up the advertising spots in the BookBub advertising email, I think there will be more of them because, you know, the stuff they were sharing in the presentation was pretty similar to what we all see on their BookBub blog. And those of us who, you know, I've got a BookBub next weekend on a box set, so that's awesome. But I know it's getting harder and harder. I would probably expect the conference to cover Facebook advertising next year, by which time it will have been kind of fully mainstream in the indie author world. One thing was a company called Kadaxis won the tech award. They have a site called authorcheckpoint.com, which I actually I found in my email that I had checked it out already in March 2015. So I thought I would have another look. You basically upload a manuscript and they say they don't store it or anything. So I'm not too worried about piracy, but it's been loading for about 20 minutes. So I don't have anything to report right now, but I might have something to report next week on that. But authorcheckpoint.com is their site. This does kind of tie into the futurist element of the show, thinking about, you know, big data. It's essentially another big data company that is mashing content, trying to give you tips on keywords, trying to help with discoverability. And I certainly am very positive, as you all know, I'm very positive about the use of AI and big data in book discoverability. I think we will be able, you know, at the moment, it's so difficult for an author or a publisher to write a book blurb that will truly describe the experience that the reader will get. And most people who are writing book blurbs are not the author. They're not people who've even read the book. So and coming up with keywords is super hard, and it's not good enough right now. What I'm hoping with the big data discovery tools is that the whole book is the metadata. And I talked about this with Thad McElroy back in last year. He'll be back on the show in 2017. And Thad and I talked about, you know, why can't the whole book be metadata? Why can't you know, if you read my book, let's say you read Destroyer of Worlds and you enjoyed that experience, why can't this big data engine find books that you will love based on the experience of reading that book, not some obscure couple of paragraphs that I wrote describing the book? So I actually have high hopes for big data and how it will help us as authors and as basically content producers, which I know is kind of horrible, but you know, we want people to read our books, and there will be more and more and more and more books written and more content out there. So we need better curation, and to have AI assisted curation, I think, is definitely the way forward. So moving into long-term thinking, I wanted to share a podcast I listened to this week, which was a discussion on ChaseJarvis.com. Chase Jarvis is a photographer. He runs Creative Live, but this was actually on Chase Jarvis' podcast with Seth Godin. And it was talking about really what does it mean to matter? And I've been learning from Seth Godin since around 2007 when I first discovered him. I mean, getting his blog and going to his events, I've seen him speak a number of times, and he's someone who really challenges all the time. He's always, if something starts to be a success, it's almost like he deliberately pivots away to do something more interesting. And that, you know, that doesn't mean that's what we have to do, but he talks about one of the really interesting things he said, which I really want to hang on to this year, is, will anyone miss you if you stop creating? Take a deep breath. So will anyone miss you if you stop creating? And that is a big deal. Because, you know, if I stop writing my novels, will anyone miss them? If I stop doing the show, you know, will anyone miss it? I hope so. you know, if I stop blogging, will people want the creative pen back? And this is, I think these are really good questions, because it means that instead of chasing just the next dollar, we are thinking about this long-term impact, this long-term body of work, and what's really important to us. And there's a whole lot of stuff right now online that no one would miss. And in fact, if it went away, it would be great. it's addictive to consume a lot of that stuff, but it's, you know, would be great if it was gone. Whereas what we want to do is aim to create work that matters, that impacts people, and that people would miss if it was gone. So yeah, I hope that gives you something to think about. I'll link to that interview in the show notes, or you can just Google Chase Jarvis, Seth Godin, and you'll find that. Okay, on personal news, I have started researching my next series this week, which is why I'm kind of thinking about these things, because I don't know, I'm kind of in love with the idea. I'm at that point with the sort of creation process that I'm like, oh, this is going to be amazing. I'm not in the difficult part yet. I'm in the reading loads of books and doing research and just in the mad idea space, especially because it's a new world, new characters, new everything. And I won't go into too much details, but I'm doing a lot of research on maps and cartography, which I love. And turns out it's a bit like graveyards. There's a whole cartographical sub niche on the internet, but also a lot of analog stuff, a lot of old maps. And I'll be going to a map exhibition next weekend, which I'm very excited about, at the British Library. I will also be getting End of Days back this week, so that will be coming out in January. I'm actually quite happy with that book now, and I'm just trying to write a better back blurb. As I mentioned, that is really hard, but hopefully get End of Days turned around quickly and out to my proofreader, and then I'm hoping that I'll get the audiobook out at the same time at the end of January. I've also been working hard on this sort of transition to a small press, and I'm working on a kind of mega post on the process of going from indie author to small press, learning lots, and we'll be sharing that once I have my ducks in a row. I've also set up some Amazon ads this week, but to be fair, I've managed to spend about 25 cents, which is quite similar to what happened last time, and haven't seen any change in sales yet. But I know some people are getting good results with it, so I will continue playing with that. Also, my audio box set is out for the London Psychic Trilogy. So very excited about that. That's Desecration, Delirium and Deviance. The aim with an audiobook box set is to give Audible subscribers who get one credit a month a better deal on their credit. So you'll get, I think it's about 21 hours of audio, which is a really good deal for your credit. So that will be really interesting to see if it makes a difference. I do need some reviews on it. So if you are interested in sort of London crime thrillers with an edge of the supernatural, email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com, and I'll get you a review copy of that London Psychic trilogy. Or of course, if you'd like to get it with your Audible credit, you'd be more than welcome. That's read by an English voice. So quite different to my Arcane series, which is read by American voices. Okay, just also a reminder that I have a new free webinar series, and that will be starting next weekend with How to Write a Novel on December the 11th. I'll be doing How to Make Money with Books on the 18th of December, and Planning for 2017 on the 29th of December. These are free webinars, and if you register, you can get the replay, and I'll be adding more over time. And you can register or check out what's going on at thecreativepen.com/learn, LEARN. And I'm looking forward to that, because I did kind of test run with the people who were on my courses a week or so ago, and that was really fun. I'm using Crowdcast software, which is really super fun. Okay, so thanks for all your emails and tweets. Here's just a selection. Sarah Lee Etta wins the best of the week. She said, listening to the podcast while crocheting a skull scarf for a friend, and sent an awesome picture of, yes, a actual scarf made of skulls, which is brilliant. I love that, Sarah Lee. That's fantastic. Amy Cesari said, the most exciting thing ever, I got laid off from my corporate job, which is great to view this in a positive light. Suddenly I get to be a full-time author. And you mentioned on the last podcast that you're not far off if you can do $1,000 a month. So I was so stoked. I screamed one of those crazy guttural screams. Thank you for everything you've shared over the last few years. So that's fantastic, Amy. And I think this is the best attitude. And I know I've had emails from a lot of people lately who are getting laid off. I don't know why this is happening sort of right now, but it is. And I don't think that will be changing. That's just life. But if you can be building up something on the side so that if it does happen, or if you choose to leave, as I did back in 2011, then, you know, happy days, really. Katie Coffrin, listening to the podcast while doing laundry. Cat was not happy. It was taken away, and sent me a lovely picture of a cat, her cat. Trevor Young. Hi to Trevor Young in Melbourne from Australia. I've been binging on the podcast. Informative and fun as always. So talking of Australia, I'm doing a full day event in Brisbane in February, but that sold out within 48 hours. So we're now doing a second event, which will be an in-conversation session at the Queensland Writers' Centre at the State Library of Queensland in Brisbane on Sunday, 26th of February. You can find it on Eventbrite. Go to the Queensland Writers' Centre on Eventbrite, or go to thecreativepen.com/speaking and you'll find a link there. So that'll be great. I'm looking forward to meeting a whole load of Aussie Indies. Fantastic. Sido said, I followed the Creative Pen's advice and made my own motivational poster. It says, you are creative, you are a writer. That's fantastic, because back in like 2008, I wrote I am creative, I am an author on a card way before I ever believed it. And there you go. You can create your own future with these type of affirmations. So that's awesome, Sido. And finally, Kitty Buchholz says, listening to the Creative Pen talk about her new plans while I ran the first time in my new home in Wellington, New Zealand. Some pictures from sunny Wellington, where I will be in February. My brother-in-law lives in Wellington, so I'll be coming down there too. Actually, because it's so cold in Bath right now, it's really, it's going to be a very, very cold winter. I'm quite looking forward to New Zealand and Australia in February, get some warmth. Okay, so today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I'll play a word from them in a minute. This corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons, Laura Mascaro, Cariad Eccleston, Michael Kingswood, Tony Ortiz of spuntoday.com, and Charles Henter. And obviously, even more thanks to those of you who've been supporting the show for over a year. I really appreciate it. You know, like the tweets and emails, it really demonstrates you want the show to continue, and very happy to be doing the show. Even when I'm sick, I think about you guys. If you would like to support the show on Patreon, you'll get the extra monthly Q&A if you haven't had enough of my voice, and I will record it once I'm well, so it will be a better audio experience. You can support the show with even just a couple of dollars a month, less than a coffee a month, at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Thank you. Here's Kobo, and then we'll be into the interview.
Hi, Creative Pen fans. This is Camille Mofidi, the European Manager for Kobo Writing Life, based in Paris. Did you know you could publish and sell your ebooks very easily all over the world with Kobo, reaching an international audience in 190 countries? Plus, you can now benefit from two brand new features on our website, readers' reviews and series numbers, that will help raising awareness and visibility for all your books. For more details, please visit our blog www.kobowritinglife.com, where these features are fully presented. Thank you for listening, and now back to your wonderful host, Joanna.
So today I'm back with Mark McGuinness. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Joe. Nice to be back.
Yes, always good to have you on the show. Just a little introduction for those who might not know Mark. Mark is an award-winning poet, non-fiction author, creative coach, and professional speaker. His latest book is Productivity for Creative People: How to Get Creative Work Done in an Always-On World, which is so totally needed, especially as we move into the new year. So I wanted to start by asking you, Mark. So you're a really smart businessman. You make a good living with your businesses, but you're also a poet, which is just fascinating because, of course, we know poetry doesn't make any money. But you've had an exciting time with your poetry in the last few months. So why don't you start by telling us a bit more about that side of you before we get into hardcore productivity?
Okay, yeah, you asked me this at a good time. So last week I went to London to read at the prize giving for the Stephen Spender Prize for 2016. Which is, as far as I'm aware, it's the biggest prize for poetry translation in the UK. And I was awarded third prize, which I was very pleased with. So I went up and read my poem and met the other poets. And, you know, it's a nice, obviously an encouraging boost to get an award like that, particularly on a long project like this, which I'm working on a translation of Geoffrey Chaucer's long poem, Troilus and Crusade. And, you know, it's taking a while, so it's nice to get a little bit of encouragement and recognition for it.
Yeah, and I love that. And obviously, you know, you do things for love as well as money. But I wondered, just to, before we get into the productivity stuff, how does your validation as a poet differ to your validation as a business person?
Good question. I think this goes back to the previous book that we talked about, where I was talking about motivation and how to stay creative while gaining money, fame, and reputation. And obviously, whatever you write, I believe you should be doing it for love, first and foremost, because otherwise it's a very long working day. But assuming that you're doing it for love, there's different kinds of reward and recognition that you can get. So money is one, fame, as in, you know, more people knowing about you, and reputation is another. And so I'm not expecting a huge amount of money and fame from this. You know, it would be nice. I wouldn't say no, but there's certainly no expectation of that. But I do want to contribute to the poetry, you know, the body of poetry that's been written in English and other languages, indeed. And so the reputation, you know, when I get a prize like this, or if I get published in a prestigious magazine or journal, then it's just a little sense of, okay, you're part of the conversation. And the people who really, you know, the audience who really love poetry, those are some of the signals they look for. Every audience is different. So I think it's really important, whatever you write, to be aware of, as well as doing it for the joy of the act itself, think about who you're trying to reach and what are the signals that let you know you're reaching them. In some cases, it's money, others it will be fame. But with a more literary work, you're likely to have to console yourself with reputation.
Yeah, and what I like is, you know...
And undying glory, of course.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And what I like is, you know, I met you online, well, I knew you online years before I actually met you in person, and I kind of knew you in this sort of productivity, internet marketing, internet business niche. And then, you know, I find out later that you're kind of, you know, not really semi-famous, but you're like, you have this big part of you that is into sort of Chaucer poetry, which most people haven't got a clue about. So I actually think it's a really good mix. And, you know, one of the issues we have as creative business people is that we have to mix or balance these aspects that may never make us a pound or a dollar with the functional tasks of running a business and creating things that might actually pay the bills. So how do we balance asset creation, the things that put money in our pocket, with the things we love, and then with the admin, because, and then the family and everything else?
Okay, so there's several things kind of bundled up together. So maybe if I start by unbundling them a little bit. So I think there's one about doing stuff for money and doing it for love. And if you follow the money argument to its logical conclusion, neither of us would be doing this.
No.
I mean, there are easier ways to make money, but, you know, as we both know, there are, those ways are generally more unfulfilling. So if you're a creator, then you need to know where your sweet spot is, let alone your sour spot, about the balance of money work and artistic or creative or fulfilling work in your life. So for me, you know, poetry is one of the non-negotiables. And so what I've done is I've created a business that's kind of complementary to that, in the sense that it supports, you know, it pays the bills, and it also creates enough time for me to do, to, you know, to spend time doing something like translating medieval poetry on a Wednesday morning. Now, one way I do that is, you know, the fact that I write poetry is one of the reasons why clients want to work with me, because I'm looking for a very particular kind of client who values the artistic side of writing, the creative side. And, you know, a lot of the business coaches out there that they look at, they're much more corporate, or they're much more logical, you know, on the money side. So that's the money creativity part. Next, we've got asset creation, which I know is really dear to your heart, Joe, and you're really super smart about this. And it's, again, it's absolutely central to my work. And the advice I give my clients is, if you're a creative, there is no career ladder. You don't get the normal rungs of promotion and social validation. And it can be a real challenge when you've got people around you, you know, giving you well-intentioned advice and, you know, shouldn't you get a proper job and all of that stuff. And actually, what I say to clients is the alternative to your career ladder is creating assets, because an asset is something that will create more value for you as time goes by. And there's different types of assets. So I would actually say that, you know, when I finish, say, the Chaucer translation, that becomes an asset for me. It probably won't make much money, but it will be, you know, it'll be part of the body of work that I want to be known for. And I'm sure opportunities will come to me because of that. And, you know, it's something that I can point to and say, yeah, I made that. I'm proud of it. Then there are assets like, say, a book or an online course or a product like that that is designed to generate money as well as opportunities. Then you've got assets like, say, a website or a mailing list or a blog or a podcast even, that you could categorize as social assets. You've also got the intellectual property in your work, which, as I know you keep telling your listeners, is not the same. You know, you can have one work and many different assets in it, intellectual property assets. There's different types of right. There's foreign rights, there's movie rights, there's audio rights, there's print rights, and so on. So the big picture of your working life, you want to be spending as much time as possible creating these assets, because, you know, you've been doing this podcast for goodness knows how many years. I'm sure it opens a lot of doors for you and it creates a lot of value for your business. But when you first started it, it probably felt like a time suck, a time drain. And I think for every creator, you know, the creators I see who are most fulfilled and happy and successful and prosperous are the ones who prioritize creating assets. And they'll typically have a mix of creative, intellectual property, social assets, you know, a business model, a company would be another. And, you know, it's a bit like the Google rule. You can probably afford to spend 20% of your time at the beginning because you've got other things to do to pay the bills. But over time, you want that balance to shift so that more and more your writing life, your business life is in that sweet spot where you're creating work that, you know, will be an ongoing asset for you.
Oh, lots in there. probably one of the most interesting things, I think, well, for me that you said there was the podcast as a good example, because I definitely am guilty of not considering things like the podcast, or, you know, I forget almost that the podcast is an asset, which of course an asset can be, you know, something that directly puts money in your pocket. But as you said, when I first started the podcast in 2009, when, you know, when podcasting wasn't really even called podcasting back then, it was just downloadable audio. But basically I started because I wanted to learn from other people, and it seemed like a good way to, you know, to try and promote them and get almost free consulting, you know, talk to people on the phone and ask them questions. So when I started it, there was no future view that it would become an income asset and something that would have, you know, tens of thousands of people listening. So I think, and it's the same with your poetry, when you translated the first line of your Chaucer work, which many other people have translated before, right? And that's the weird thing with translation. It's not even like, it's original. It's an original work, but you know, it's not new necessarily in the world. And the same as a podcast. It's like, yeah, lots of other people are talking about productivity. So it's kind of having that foresight to think, okay, well, in 5 years' time, do I want to have this thing in my body of work? And then do I want to spend the time working on it with no financial return? And even if it never returns anything financially, do I still want to do it for the love of it? So it's, you know, really considering the time that you spend for, you know, for good things that may or may not turn out to be money.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the way I look at it in terms of what you could be spending your time on in your business, I think there's four basic categories. So one is the ongoing work. This is the email, this is the meetings, this is the admin, this is the accounts, all the stuff that you have to do to keep the lights on and the doors open. Another thing is events. And so for an author, probably one of the biggest events would be a book launch. Another one might be a conference. So these are time limited, you know, that you've got to do them by a certain date. And after that date, they're over, they're done with, their history. The third one is backlogs, which is all the stuff that you wish you'd done earlier. You know, it could be filing, it could be website maintenance, it could, accounts again is a classic one for freelancers. And clearing a backlog makes you feel great, but all it will do is get you to zero.
Mm.
The fourth category is asset creation. And at the beginning, it's slow and it may be a very small or even non-existent part of your income or your opportunity generation. But as time goes by, the more time you dedicate to it, the more value it creates and the easier all the other stuff becomes. You know, like, say, your podcast, the kind of asset I would describe it as is an opportunity magnet. If you look at it, I mean, on the one hand, you're doing it because you obviously enjoy doing it. You're giving a lot of value. And because of that, things come to you. You know, you're invited to speak. People want to be on your show. People know your name. Yeah. And they think, oh, I wonder what Joe's books are like. And, you know, all of that kind of thing. So, you know, and the hard part of asset creation is it's never urgent and it's risky. It might not pay off. And there's always plenty of other stuff, you know, in the ongoing and events category that is pushing for our attention. So I think one of the big challenges that we've got is to keep focused on that big picture. I mean, I love that the episode of the podcast this week, you were saying you've got this great question pinned up on the wall where you say, how does my work today contribute to my body of work? Something like that.
Yeah. What can I create today that impacts my long-term wealth, legacy, body of work? Yeah.
That's it. Yes. Right. So that's a great question to bear in mind because that keeps you focused on the big picture. And, you know, as in the terms of what we're talking about today, asset creation.
Yeah. No, and that's a really great bucket. And I might have to change it. It might have to say, what can I create this week? As opposed to today, because it's funny because while you're talking, I'm like, you know, this morning I got up at 6 and it, you know, because I've got all these big plans at the moment and for next year. And it was like, okay, I have enough to do just to do everything I was doing just to maintain what I've created, the monster that is having two brands and books and all of, you know, the podcast and, you know, to maintain the level I'm at, I have to work. Full and not have to work full time, but I love working full time. So how am I going to make extra time to create more? So it's like, okay, it has to be earlier. So I have to get up earlier because I now have these new projects and I really want to do those, but I need to make more time. So I wonder if you could talk a bit more about making time and also balancing those four areas in the time that people have, especially if they already have a day job.
Yeah, I mean, well, the first thing is it's always a challenge because there's always something that feels more urgent. I mean, it's everyone says when you finish a book, oh, it's amazing that you wrote a book. Well done. But when you're sat there on, you know, the wet Wednesday morning trying to get up at 6 o'clock when you'd rather be in bed, there's nobody there to cheer you on. So, you know, that's the struggle that we've got. But the thing I like about, you know, listening to you describe it there, you're coming from a place of enthusiasm. I really want to do these new projects, so I'm prepared to get up at 6. And I did this years ago when I 10 years ago almost. No, it's getting on for 11 now. When I wanted to start a blog, and I already had too many things on my plate. So I got up at 6 and I wrote it in the morning before, you know, all the bedlam started. And I would have a few people would make comments, like when they saw the blog, they said, well, of course, I'm too busy to do something like that. And there's always this kind of cult of busyness that you can't be doing anything important if you've got time to fritter away on a blog or poetry or whatever it may be. So ignore that kind of talk. And everybody's got the time. I mean, you know, I've done years and years ago, 20 odd years ago, when I was my first professional training was as a psychotherapist. And I had a day job in publishing to pay the bills for that. And so I would get up early. I would study in the mornings. I would study in the evenings. I would travel to London at weekends, stay with friends. You know, while I was doing my training, my friends were all going out partying to the nightclubs, and I would hear them come in as I was sleeping on their sofa. And then I would get up and do my day studying and then do, you know, and but actually I loved doing it because this was creating my future. And I would say, if you're struggling, even an hour a day or even an hour a week, but connect with that enthusiasm to make it happen, because you potentially you're creating a whole different future for yourself.
Yeah, and it's great to hear you talk about that 10-11 year thing, because it was 2006 when I started writing that first nonfiction book, and I did that exactly the same way as you. I got up at 5. It was much easier to get up at 5 a.m. in Australia because the sun comes up earlier. But you know, I would get up at 5. I would do, you know, an hour and a half before then getting ready to go to work, and when I came home, I started looking. You know, that's when I used time for blogging and meeting people online and starting to learn. And then weekends as well. So I think you're totally right. And I do think it's about, what do you want? Like, literally, what do you want to create in the next 5 years or 10 years? Like you and I, you know, we've spent 10 years doing this, and that's why we're in the position we are now. But it's not, we haven't, you know, we've just put time aside every single day for the thing that we want to create in our future. And it seems like magic in a way. Like I sometimes look up my life now and go, how the hell did this happen? But it literally is just time every day, and it used to be an hour every day or 2 hours every day, and now it's, you know, probably 10 hours a day. And I still love it, so it was obviously the right thing. So I guess, you know, your comment on the 10-year overnight success, do you think that that is what it takes?
Yeah, I mean, let's not get too depressing. I mean, you don't have to wait 10 years before you see any results, but I think it was about a year before my first blog got any serious traction in terms of new business opportunities. But having said that, I was pretty clueless about what I was doing. And, you know, I went up quite a few blind alleys with it. But yeah, certainly. Oh, but I mean, the good news is the more it will take time. I mean, it takes several months to write a book, or it certainly does for me. But, and one book isn't going to change your whole life, probably. But the next book and the next book and the next book, they all compound over time. It's like saving. So by the time you get to 10 years, then you actually picked up a lot more momentum than maybe you ever suspected.
Mm. And there's a book there, The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. Right. That was one of those books that I read that and I was like, oh my goodness, I get it, you know, and the graph does get more exponential. And you're right, of course, you know, I left my day job in 2011. So it's been 5 years since I left my job to do this. But, you know, the level, and I think also the level of success in any career, you know, I often say, how valuable in any job are you after 1 year? Like, really, you're not very valuable after 1 year. You're more valuable after 5 years, and after 10 years you're running a department, you're very valuable, and that's why people get hired when they have 10 years experience. So I think there's definitely a parallel with any kind of career.
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, W.H. Auden used to say, if I'd gone in his old age, he used to say, if I'd, you know, obviously the poet Auden, he used to say, if I'd gone into the church, I'd be a bishop by now. And of course he hadn't, and he didn't, and he wasn't. But you see, there was no official ranking for poets. Like the body of work he'd created, he was kind of the equivalent of a bishop, or maybe even an archbishop or a pontiff.
Yeah, no, it's very true. Okay, so I still want to get more specific. Yeah. So how do you manage your time? So I have, I've mentioned before on the show, I still have a physical file of fax, although I'm actually wondering about moving on to a digital calendar because I am petrified about losing it. Okay, yeah, I'm like, yeah. If I lose this, you know, I am totally screwed. So I really, you know, and I don't want to duplicate loads of stuff. But so that's one question. What's your recommended online calendar? But also, and I also use Things App, which I love. I'm now using Asana to do, you know, work with my other sort of freelancers. So how, you know, what are the tools that you use and recommend?
Okay, so calendar, I use Google Calendar because I can't mm-hmm. lose it, and I can sync it across the Mac and the phone. And, you know, if I'm out and about, I can put an appointment in and then it will be synced to the desktop. So that's nice and easy. Let's see, to-do list, I use... I've got a stack of post-its. They're about 2.5 by 2.5 inches. And I've finally calibrated this to the size of my handwriting for the amount of stuff that I can do in one day. So every day I sit down and I've got a post-it in front of me. And top left is the big writing project for today. And then down the left-hand column is all my client commitments for the day, things I promised to do for clients. And then the right-hand column is everything else. And I've got a chapter in the book called If It Won't Fit in a Post-it, It Won't Fit in Your Day. So when I sit down, it really makes me focus, you know, because if I'm struggling to fit everything on that post-it, I know I'm not going to get it done today. I'm just kidding myself. And I used to be the world's worst at overcommitting. You know, I'd have these digital task list managers, and it was just hundreds of items long. And it was so demotivating to look at it and realize I would probably never do all of it. So every day after about 9 o'clock, nothing else gets on that post-it unless it's an emergency. Anything else that comes in goes on the post-it underneath, which is the post-it for tomorrow. And that creates a kind of buffer in my day. So it means that I can finish my day's work. If I do everything on that post-it, I have been a good boy and I have done my work for today and I can... finish work. Anything else that comes in, I'll put it on tomorrow's list. And that means the list is today's list. You know, I'm never going to have one of those lists that's bigger at the end of the day than it was at the beginning because I kept adding to it during the day. And this is a variation on a tip I got from a guy called Mark Forster, who wrote a great book called Do It Tomorrow, which is based, you know, anything that comes in today, you put it on the list for tomorrow. And you literally do it tomorrow. And what that means is you've had a bit of time to kind of percolate. And it gets you off that hamster wheel of just doing stuff. You know, you do stuff and then you do one thing and then another two come in and you're constantly in reactive mode. This gets you out of that. So that's the daily to-do list. And then for beyond that, for big picture project management, I'm actually using Scrivener. Because I started using it to write books and I realized it's really good for managing a big writing project. I thought, well, actually, I could manage any project in it. You know, I love the thing of having several different kind of sub-documents, but I can still see the big picture. So every time I've got a major project, I'll create a Scrivener file for it and, you know, just throw everything in there. Oh, and Evernote as well. I'm a recent convert to Evernote. So particularly for poetry drafts, if I'm writing at the desktop, I can upload it to an Evernote notebook. And then I'm sitting in the cafe with my beret on, smoking a gitane, and I'm writing in my notebook. And it's a shame we're not doing this as video. You could see all that for real. I'm writing in my notebook and I write down a page or two of verse and I can scan it and upload it to Evernote to the same notebook that I'm using for the poem in, you know, on the Mac. And that means all my drafts are collected in the same place. And I actually find I'm using my notebook a lot more because, you know, before it felt like a bit of a black hole. I'd write something in the notebook and I might not see it for 5 years. Mm. But now Evernote captures all of that stuff for me.
Oh, you know, this is the thing. I've tried Evernote a couple of times and every time I'm like, oh, I just, you know, it just doesn't fit in my processes. And you saying that now, because I have so many notebooks and I keep looking at them all and I create, you know, just in that one trip away to America and then Israel, I filled a whole new Moleskine notebook with notes and thoughts and ideas. And I've got it on my desk and I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, how do I get everything out of that and out of everything? And that's what you're saying about Evernote is great. And I know now they have Moleskine journals that actually are synced with Evernote in some way, like are specially designed for Evernote. So I think, you know, people need to realize that the tech is changing all the time. And, you know, I've failed on Evernote before, but you saying that makes me want to go back to it for that reason. Like if that's the only reason I use it, that will be a good reason, because what it does OCR, doesn't it? Optical character recognition. Does it work with your handwriting?
No, I haven't even tried it, Joe. And I'm sure it's like Scrivener. You know, there's all kinds of stuff I could do with Scrivener, but you know, the killer feature for me is I can have, you know, 20 chapters all with subdocuments within one document. I can see the big picture and the small picture. I can rearrange the chapters. I can zoom in and zoom out of my book. That's pretty well all I use with Scrivener, apart from, you know, the writing mode where you've got the nice white bar down the middle of the screen. So, you know, I guess I could take a course and learn more, but I'm kind of a good believer in keeping things as simple as possible, because I know I've got a tendency to overcomplicate. So at the moment, I'm just being really basic with Evernote, you know, and just using it like that. Okay. But there are all kinds of things that it can do potentially, as indeed Scrivener, which I know you know a lot more than I do.
Yeah, well, and I use Scrivener for a lot too. But and what you just said is really important. So don't go looking for a tool if you don't have a problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, your problem and one of my problems is I like writing in my notebook, but then I'm worried that I will lose that physical writing. And how can I integrate that into my creation process? Or do I literally just have to type up what's in my notebook? So there is a problem there and Evernote might fix that problem. You know, for me now, I've been happy using the Filofax for years, but now my number of appointments in the business is growing. And now I'm like, my problem is, what if I lose this? So then it's like, okay, I finally might need to embrace a calendar app, which, you know, makes me go, oh. But, you know, Asana, I didn't think, you know, when Jonathan, my husband, joined the company, I never used Asana before. And he said, you can't just email me stuff. We need a tool where we can put tasks. And I'm like, oh, like a co-working tool. Oh, like Asana.
Right.
So now I use that also with Alexandra, my VA. So I think the point to everyone listening is, don't go and buy loads of random tools. Wait until you have a problem and then find a tool to fix it. You know, like Vellum, you know, you've heard me mention Vellum. Like those of us who've gone to Vellum are now just loving ebook formatting, and it's solved the problem of ebook formatting. So I'm like, I'm an evangelist for it. So there's another good example. Right. I wondered if you tried
Vellum. I haven't, yet. No, sorry. I didn't realize that was a question. Sorry. No, I'm using Jason at Polgra Studio. I just send it to him and he does it all for me. So I had a horrendous experience formatting my very first ebook, and now I'm very happy just to have somebody to send it to and say, please make it so.
Yes. And that's a great example of something that you've decided that's not on my list. That is on someone else's list. So that's great. Outsourcing these other things. Like I'm just literally at the moment, I'm going through the process of outsourcing a lot of the audio stuff for the podcast. So this podcast will actually, you're going to be one of the first people who'll be in the new system. Ooh. This audio should sound better because we actually have a professional audio person.
Oh, I feel special.
Doing it. I know, exactly. Okay, so you also use dictation.
Yes.
And many indies, many authors, in fact, in general, are really interested in dictation. So how do you use dictation specifically for your books? And do you have any tips?
Okay, so I got into it years ago when I had absolutely horrendous RSI and literally could hardly touch a keyboard for 6 months. And as a writer, you know, using the internet for my business, you can imagine that this was a bit of an inconvenience. I discovered Dragon, naturally speaking, which was so good that I installed Windows Vista on my beloved Mac. I partitioned the Mac because the Mac version wasn't that good then. And the Windows version was just amazing. I could literally just talk the speed I'm talking to you now, and it will get it 90% accurate. These days, I'm pleased to say the Mac version is better, so I'm using the Mac one. It's still not quite as good as the Windows, but it's usable. And what I use it for is generating that first draft of prose. I don't use it for poetry. I write poetry far too slowly to need speech recognition. But what I'll have, say, I might have a rough outline of a chapter sketched out, and I'll print that off, or I'll have that open on one window, and then I'll just get a really basic text editor and speak to the computer to just, you know, it's like speaking from the notes. You know, I'll have the, you know, a bit like bullet points for presentation. I'll have my notes in front of me and I will speak to the screen. And the thing I really like is I've used a Bluetooth wireless headset, which means I can walk away from the computer. And I set the font to something ridiculous, like size 30. And I stick some techno on the sound system. And I walk up and down and I dictate to my electronic secretary. And I see the words magically appearing on the screen. And it's a wonderful way to write because I get to walk and talk. My wife always thinks it's hilarious that I walk up and down when I'm on the phone. But there's something about moving that helps it makes it easier to speak. And I do that I can generate a lot of text quite quickly, you know, and I'm a fairly thoughtful, you know, I like to think about the writing as I go, but even so, even allowing for that. And I think the best thing it does is, you know, when you're typing, and I'm a pretty fast typist, but you're typing one sentence, but you've thought of the next two sentences in your mind, and you're trying to hold them in your short-term memory while you're typing this one. And then, you know, it's like your mind wants to keep bounding ahead, and, you know, and you can get really, I hadn't quite realized what an issue that was until I was using the speech recognition. And again, as soon as I speak the sentence, it's out, it's on the screen, it's captured. And then I will copy and paste that into Scrivener. And the next day, or, you know, a few days later, not the same day, I'll go through and I'll edit that text. And that's the start of, and, you know, there'll be, occasionally it'll get the wrong word in. It will never spell a word wrong, but sometimes it might put in the wrong word entirely. So you've got to learn a different kind of proofreading. But generally, in terms of the speed and the fluency and the ease of writing, I wouldn't go back to typing.
Yeah, that's great. And I got into dictation earlier this year when I did have RSI, yeah. And then my RSI went away and I went back to typing.
Oh, did you? Right. I didn't go back. I mean, I will type emails and stuff, but for actual writing, I just like the dictation so much I stayed with it.
Well, I'm definitely going to have another go because I just, you know, I think it's a good way to get that, like you say, that first draft written, because often that first draft is really painful. Well, it is yeah. For me, it is for many people. And if you can get something like, you know, if I can get a whole load of words down, the editing process, I actually love editing more than first. Like, I love all the idea stuff, and then I love editing, and probably the first draft, bashing it out, is the least fun yeah. bit for me, which is funny because a lot of people love that bit.
Yeah, I enjoy rewriting more than the initial. I guess for poetry I do. I'm not sure about prose, but I do enjoy the rewriting. I like, you know, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so I like trying to, you know, constantly improving it and tweaking it.
Yeah, that's one of the problems of being a poet, probably. It's always, you never, and there's never the final word, is there? There's always another word.
That's the joy of it, Jo. You
know? Oh, sorry. The joy of it, of course. no, that's cool. Okay, so finally, last question. You also mentioned do more nothing, which I think is so important. And one of the reasons I came back from America with, like, a new direction for the business is because I had time to walk yeah. and think, and I actually just put everything on hold. You know, I'd scheduled all the podcasts, I'd done a whole load of stuff to make sure I had time to think. So what do you mean by do more nothing, and how can we actually make that time when we've just filled everyone's time with everything else?
Yeah, so it's, I mean, essentially it's time when we're not working and you're relaxing, you're playing sport, spending time with friends, family, watching a movie, traveling, or meditating, which is how I discovered it. You know, years ago, I was going to silent retreats at a Buddhist monastery. And it was a really amazing experience because what you do all day is, you know, you're in silence and you alternate sitting and walking meditation. And you basically observe your mind and you observe your body and you observe your emotions and your state throughout the day. And I discovered several things about the kind of the natural rhythm of energy. You know, so for instance, in the morning, after a few days, I had this weird experience. About 10 o'clock in the morning, I would have an insight that would just come out of nowhere. And it would be about some problem or some issue or even some creative project I was working on. And it would be really clear and sharp and powerful and, you know, something that I took away and applied in my life afterwards. And this came with no effort. All I was doing, I was deliberately not getting caught up in thinking. And typically it would come into my mind and it would be about something that I wasn't consciously thinking about before. And I noticed this happened in the morning. I could almost set my watch by it every day. It was a little uncanny. And then in the afternoon, I've noticed my energy dipped. I got a bit sleepy after lunch. It was like walking through treacle. And one of the things I took back into my life afterwards was A, create space for nothing. So I have a regular morning meditation practice that just helps. I'm sure it just helps things trickle through and work themselves out and keep hold of the big picture and not get so caught up in the day to day. And the other thing is really, it made me very aware of when I'm at my best as a writer, which was clearly in the mornings. That's when my mind is clearest. So it's really hard to get an appointment with me these days in the morning. We're only talking this morning because, you know, we're both busy and we couldn't find any other time. But it's actually quite rare that I would do this at this time of day because, you know, my mind is clearer. It's much easier. The words will flow much more quickly. So typically these days I just write in the mornings. You know, I have a coaching practice. A lot of my clients are in the States. So with the time zones, it's quite good because when it gets to the afternoon, then they're awake and I can, you know, so I write in the morning, coach in the afternoon. And then I take nearly every evening off and just about every weekend. The only times I would work evenings or weekends is when it's, you know, if there's a, you know, a big launch on or I was doing it out of enthusiasm because, you know, I just couldn't wait till the morning.
Yeah, and we should say that you know you're married and you have two kids, right? So it's not like you're just
well,
on
that's
your
a
own.
That's a big factor as well. Yeah, you know, obviously I want to create time for them.
Yeah, and I think that's really important for people to realize. Like, you know, you managed to fit this stuff into a life, which, you know, your life is about your family and your poetry, you know, which are bigger things, and then the coaching business and the nonfiction and everything work into that. But yeah, I think that's awesome. So where can people find you and your books online?
Well, if you're interested in the poetry, that's at markmcginnis.com. And for the creativity, coaching and related books, it's lateralaction.com. So the productivity for creative people book is lateralaction.com/productivity.
And it's on all available bookstores.
That's right, yes.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Mark.
Thanks,
that was Jo. Brilliant.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.